We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. A huge thanks to all of you that have already watched Season 5, Episode 1, that was called The Middles.
Yeah.
It was the Veloster N, the Civic Si, and the GTI Rabbit Edition.
The Middles.
So we did that. That was first episode, first of six new episodes in Season 5, which is playing right now on the Motor Trend cable channel. Yes, brief service announcement. That is the Motor Trend cable channel, not available on the app because Motor Trend doesn't own our show. If they would
That's
like to
right.
put it on the app, we would be more than happy to take that check.
And, because they don't own the show, thank you a million times to our sponsors, Covercraft
yes.
and Greer's Garage. And if you use the code every day, hopefully this is ingrained in you by
yeah.
now, but it actually works. We actually just had somebody write to us and mm-hmm. say, maybe I haven't been following along lately, but I just used the code and it got me 10% off.
And free shipping.
Yeah.
Both of the above. So you can save some real good stuff there.
Yeah,
plus, their stuff
great.
Is great. And we are right in the middle of summertime. We actually had a mini meetup here recently with Drew.
Yeah,
Drew,
right.
how are you, sir?
Right.
And we went on a bike ride with him. And he actually looked at me and he went, "You really do use your sunshades?" And I said, "Yes.
Heck yeah.
Yes,
man.
It gets hot. I don't want to get in the car quite as hot. I need to." The only
Sizzles.
Downside is I've got to get one made for the Lotus because apparently the Lotus, they don't have one.
Yeah, those custom order, but they
exactly,
will.
Because they will.
Is,
exactly right.
Will.
Which is very cool. You can get it. And they really do fit. So those are awesome, and I'm swearing by it right now. In the it is summertime here, Fike and stuff, which reminds me, other
sure.
things. We've got mountain bike content coming.
Oh,
couple
yes.
weeks out, 2-3 weeks
That's
out, we'll
right.
have our first mountain bike content coming. We're hoping for more of that down the line. I know this is not a biking show. I am aware. I've heard. I got the memo. It's not going to be a major thing, but since it's a part of what Paul and I do all summer, and you guys seem to like some of the mountain biking stuff, we'll have some mountain biking videos. Very simple, fast blast style reviews of those. Except it will not be two of us on a bike. I should clarify. So,
no.
Yeah, anyway, but
different
that's
going
to be fun as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've got a cool topic Tuesday to discuss here. It's a continuation of something that Todd and I have brought up before. That is about driver's education.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
actually, this comes from a recent press release from Volvo Cars USA, who is asking the state of driver education and is driver's education good enough these days? Mm-hmm. It's the latest in a series of Volvo reports from Volvo Car USA and the Harris Poll, and you can actually go on their media site and find this very poll and download. It's very interesting, but there's a few questions that we want to dive into for the Topic Tuesday. And then we've also got a cool debate for Orlin Carney in the South Seattle area.
Yeah,
this is the smile test, essentially.
I love it.
You know, a zombie commuter, and he wants to get back into something that's going to make him smile.
Let's do something better for him, for sure. That'll be cool. And then, of course, we have a ton of questions. You guys are
we
always
do.
Great about questions. The minute Paul posts for questions, we get a ton.
Oh, I love it. There's a bit of news over the holiday weekend here in the U.S., Independence Day holiday, and of course the Goodwood Festival of Speed has been going on constantly
mm-hmm.
with
yes,
pretty much
very
everything
cool.
on the planet. And there is
yes. It's awesome.
a little thing that I do want to touch on here from De Tomaso.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
De Tomaso unveiled their P72 supercar designed
yes.
by Joan Wong,
mm-hmm.
who is also the designer. It actually shares its essential ingredients with the Apollo IE supercar.
Mm.
It's also very, very close to the 2006 Glickenhaus Ferrari P45 designed by Pininfarina.
It's close in underpinnings or it's close
well,
in...
It's
regard?
Close in style.
Okay, all right.
And so, cruising through Instagram this morning, I saw the Glickenhaus feed mm-hmm. call out De Tomaso saying, haha, well, as I'm quoting, they put tracing paper over our Ferrari P34, pasted much of the P45 stolen interior from Horatio, pumped it up like a Vargas girl, and turned it into an anime.
Wow. So they had things to say.
Oh, man. So I agree. This P45 was an homage to the Le Mans losing P330. Well, the P34
okay.
from 1966 and 1967. You remember that was the year that Ford took the top three positions at
mm-hmm,
Le Mans,
mm-hmm.
and then everything else, well, for the four positions after that, was Porsche. And so these were the cars that, you know, Ford and Porsche were competing against, but they're beautiful. They're
mm-hmm.
gorgeous. They're phenomenal cars. And Glickenhaus has made now a business in racing. They are in the top category of racing. They have
mm-hmm.
at least five category wins, including the 24 Hours of Nürburgring, a lot of others, 24 Hours of COTA, I believe. They're actually a full-on race team, and
yeah.
and they have designed some amazing stuff, and they're actually building their engine, their own engine now. The latest racing news that I hear is that they are going to compete with Aston Martin in Le Mans at the highest level now. So
this
the,
is what money can do.
It's astounding.
Well, let me put it another way. I should be more fair. This is what money and our car obsession does. If you have the disease and the money will feed that, then all of a sudden, I mean, if we had this money, we would do crazy things like this too. Of course we would.
So essentially the Instagram feed was a little bit of complaining that the De Tomaso, this supercar, kind of copied what was going on over at Glickenhaus. But I want to say competition is healthy. But here's the thing. That Ferrari, that homage that used an Enzo as its foundation,
yes,
was it in itself an homage to the 66-67 Ferrari 330.
It's hard to point fingers. You're absolutely right.
So there's no real moratorium or even, you know, an exclusivity to building homage cars. Mm-hmm, and they did a great job. But here's De Tomaso with also a racing history and a long lineage of doing things differently. I almost see it actually referencing what you would call the Tomasima cars from... Gosh, back in the 60s as well. So just, yes, I get it, cartoonish proportions, but look at that original Ferrari 330, the balloon fenders. It it was not really restrained. It was a race car. Let's go nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was that beautiful, you know, swollen look to the fenders in that era that Ford GTs had it too. Mm. Every car was doing this. Porsche, everybody had that similar look. So I just want to say I hear you. You could argue that this De Tomaso kind of copied what the Glickenhaus car was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was also already an homage to what Ferrari
was doing.
It's
already a reference. It's a very good point. It's a very good point.
I don't know who can claim what, but ultimately competition is healthy. They're both beautiful cars.
I love this P72, by the way.
It's gorgeous.
It's spectacular.
It's gorgeous.
I really think it's
there are some cartoony looks.
The
Jim was saying, well, I see Jeff Koons, not a Caravaggio. You know, I get it. You know, in the art world, Jeff Koons is known for, you know, kind of cartoonish proportions things. But I like both. I think there's a place for both. Mm. And ultimately, there's a place for both in the world of cars. I'm just glad that supercars and, you know, are being continued to push on. I mean, heck, Gordon Murray's getting back in the game, so...
Yeah, craziness.
Give me a break. Anyway.
Well, but this is that
I thought
whole,
it was really crazy.
It is nuts, and of course, the thing I'm sad about is there's going to be, what, 72 of these, is what they're saying?
Yeah.
And of course, they're all going to go to collectors and not be driven, and that just makes me sad. I just want to see one of these in motion.
For sure. And Glickenhaus drives his stuff.
Yes, he does. He builds his own stuff and then drives it into the ground, which is awesome.
To
which
be
is fantastic.
Commended. But this high level.
De Tomaso, honestly, I think it looks as iconic as the other stuff that brand has made. I think it's very to brand.
Yeah.
If you look at the Mangusta and the Pantera and those kind of cars, those at a car show are kind of timeless. I mean, you know they're not last week, but you look at them and you're like, that still looks great. I think this holds up that tradition really well.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're jumping from supercars and Goodwood Festival of Speed to our topic Tuesday, which is the driver's education. And again, this came from Volvo Cars, which anybody can go look up.
Yeah.
It is the report in conjunction with the Harris poll. And it's just saying now driver's education is designed to be passed rather than designed to test your driving skills.
Mm-hmm. It's a lowest common denominator, yeah.
At least in the U.S.
For sure.
I went digging into some information about driver's education around the world, but you and I have brought up the idea of graduated licenses, and we've talked about... I was just getting into a discussion the other day with a guy and complaining that Utah drivers are the worst, and I'm thinking, you grew up in Boston, like...
Interesting.
I've heard of bad drivers there. We see bad driving in LA. So we see it everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
I really don't think there's a competition like which state is the worst. There's bad drivers everywhere, right?
Yes. The difference I find is just you have to figure out what make and model they typically all drive. That's
exactly,
what changes state
exactly.
to state. The bad driving is universal, unfortunately. And it is a situation where I do think, you know, and this article talks about it, as driver's ed becomes less and less common. It used to be something you could do through your school. And now you have to find a third-party company to do it, and that they have to make money. They need students to pass. Look, I'll go really conspiracy theory for a second. Since it's no longer done connected to schools, okay, you have to be a private entity who wants to do this. And by the way, bless you for deciding to want to teach a bunch of people to drive. Bless you for that. But that means you have to run a business. But in the modern time, if you run a solo business that does one thing, what kills you is bad reviews. What's going to do a bad review? I took my driving test from these people and I didn't pass. Which means everything's got to be lowered. Everything's got to be easier than it was the last time. I think it's bringing the entire standard down.
Well, you bring up a good question here. Should this now be included again as part of public education in the U.S.? And then for parents seeking to fill in the gaps, which mm-hmm. this report references, nowhere on this list of things to help you improve, to help new drivers improve, mm-hmm. teens to improve, is a specialty school like track driving. We see driver's education, but what does that mean? How far does it go?
Yeah.
And you and I have touched on this, and I thought it'd be a great opportunity to actually dive into this further, because we've talked about the graduated licenses, mm-hmm. which many countries or places on the planet have adopted mm-hmm. for their new drivers. Or over here is tech. Should more cameras be added? Should VR training be added? You know, what kind of new tech should be added to the entire curriculum? Because as you've probably heard me say before, you and I just pretty much want to teach the world how to drive better, as you and I have discovered the pleasure in improving our skills.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It comes from, honestly, both hands on the steering wheel and on a higher attention level. And, just always reminding yourself, okay, I'm in a car now. I'm not just, it's so easy. I'm just going to get food for dinner, or I'm mm-hmm, just mm-hmm. doing a quick errand, whatever that is. I come to all these questions, first of all, wanting to know what's going on around the world.
Okay.
And so I dug into a little bit of information here. First of all, data from worldatlas.com that was recently updated on March 15th of 2019 by Ali Asghar Abuwala.
Wow. So well done.
There's a list here of countries or places where it's hardest to get a driver's license.
Okay. All right.
Topping the list, Saudi Arabia. South Africa.
That's for other reasons.
Well,
that's not because the driving test is hard. It's a whole separate thing.
These are all different levels, of course.
Exactly.
South Africa is up there. United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Singapore, interestingly.
Interesting, yeah. Okay.
Finland, which has a graduated license, and it also depends on theory lessons and time, a lot of time spent with an instructor.
Yeah, Finland is difficult, but they create great drivers as a result.
If you want to win, get a Finn, right?
Get a Finn, yeah.
Japan is way up there on the list
as
far as just difficulty. Germany has a two-stage theory test and a minimum number of lessons on the Autobahn. And then for all urban driving tests, all assisting features are deactivated on the car.
Interesting.
And they have a high failure rate for the test.
Interesting. Huh.
They take it very seriously.
Yeah, for sure they do.
France has graduated licenses for ages 15 to 18.
Okay.
Norway, where you spent your growing up years, is really hard. There's a four-part training in addition to the theory exam.
Wow.
The Canadian province of Quebec has mandatory driver training, also has the graduated driver license system. So I come to this going, all right, is everybody doing it better than we are? The answer is no, because up until 2017, there was no test required in Mexico and not much required for China either.
Interesting.
So we're not we're somewhere mid to bottom as far as, you know, requirements.
Yeah.
And I keep coming back to the responsibility and the headspace that you bring to driving a car.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then with track driving, nowhere in any research have I seen track skills or track driving as it relates and improving to your street driving skills.
Yeah, fair.
So I definitely think it translates to street driving.
Completely it does.
I'm also thinking about some information here that the most difficult cities to navigate.
Okay.
The third toughest city on the list is New Delhi, India.
Be careful, all of you who regularly drive and listen to our podcast around New Delhi.
Well, I have heard Waymo, the folks at Waymo, indicate that they will not be introducing autonomous driving in places like New Delhi.
Sure, of course not.
Sheer people.
Yeah, people and also lots of disregard for the rules, and you have a one vehicle paying attention to the rules, it's going to get nowhere.
The car would never move.
Yeah, it's going to get nowhere. Yeah.
So I come to the importance of driving, and I love that Volvo is taking this very seriously, and I know that other car companies think about it, but it doesn't seem like anybody has put as much research towards it as Volvo has, because they're known for their safety.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
These assist features, though.
Well, in contrast, you bring this up, this dawns on me. There's been another thing that's happened in the news the last few days, is Elon Musk has talked about the fact that part of the reason he wants to get all of the Teslas into robo-taxi mode is to stop selling them. So that now the fleet is feeding money back into Tesla. And that's now the grand design for how to make money. Not that we sell cars, but we have robo-taxis. Tesla is the new Uber, but it's no drivers, okay, mm-hmm. essentially. This is the current grand scheme. I'm saying that with a wink because
sure.
wait for the next tweet. But the point is, there is a segment of, I'm not going to say car-loving culture. I'm going to say car-aware culture
mm-hmm.
okay. that is only looking for us all to get our hands off the wheel as soon as possible and let something else do it. And okay. I think you listening are in that group where you're just like, no, I actually like doing this.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of people yeah. stuck in the middle and not sure where they fall. But I think that one of the big issues that we have is you do have a lot of people. When Chad, our police officer friend, was on here, he talked about the people that he has pulled over who are either A, terrified of driving, or B, mm-hmm. would rather not.
Yeah.
So there's a segment of the populace.
That exists.
That absolutely. Take a Turo, be in a robo-taxi, be in an autonomous car. Great, because it takes stress off of you, and it takes, if you will, safety concerns off the road to some degree mm-hmm. for that mm-hmm. for that group. I'm not saying that everybody that likes to drive is a good driver. I'm not saying that, by the way. But then wouldn't it be interesting if
we did not have equal.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't it be interesting if we did have a graduated license system, and I want to give you some of my thoughts on that in a minute, that actually allowed for, if you want to drive yourself, there are levels of how much you're allowed to do based on how much time you put in to get trained properly.
Which is kind of where my headspace is at. I mean, first of all, coming back to public education, don't ask me how to fund it, but I do feel like we should include
And the politicians education. Won't know either. Yeah,
well,
it's fine.
Yeah. I in no way do I want to sound like that. I have not fully thought it through. But the point is, I want people to be trained. I want young drivers to come away with best driving education possible. So if that's the headline, how do we do that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What money does it cost? And how can we get people into this? And how can we train them beyond, all right, wait for the oncoming cars to go through the light before you turn left so you don't get T-boned?
It's helpful.
You know, little things.
The LA left is something you have to learn by fire. Yeah.
Little, you know, that kind of stuff versus graduating to car control and understanding the weight over your tires mm-hmm. and checking your tires. Honestly, I mean, it comes down to some minutia that people don't want to think about.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
thinking about tire pressures. I mean, we have digital tire pressure gauges in all of our cars now, practically.
Yeah,
but
you're supposed to.
Are they always accurate? And knowing tire pressures and just knowing mm-hmm. basic mm-hmm. things about how your car is going to be feeling and control, you know, cool mornings, your tires are cold.
Yes. Very true.
You can't take that on ramp like you did before.
Yeah.
You know, all these kinds of things. I just want the level of awareness and instructing, but what it comes back to is the level of interest people have to your point.
Yes. Very true.
A lot of people don't care. They don't want to.
No.
They'd rather be shuttled around.
Yes.
So autonomous cars are going to move at the lowest common denominator speed.
Yes. And I also think that it creates a scenario, if there was a graduated thing, it creates a scenario where if you want to drive, but you just want to drive to have the freedom to get yourself places whenever you want, you'd like to drive at that level, but you don't need to do anything else. That's one level. And then I see, this is not fully fleshed out. I realize that there's all kinds of infrastructure,
most of our ideas
financial
are just
discussion.
Ill-prepared.
This is the reality of Topic Tuesdays. We're just riffing here. But I think of it kind of like a combination of the Autobahn system mixed with our U.S. system of the HOV lane.
Mm.
And my point being here, when you're driving on the Autobahn, all of their street signs, if you've seen our pilgrimage film, we actually break this down in detail. All their street signs for speed are a circle about the size of if you think about somebody's bar tray, a circular bar tray, it's about that size. It's not that big.
Yeah.
And that has different indicators for what you need to know about the road's condition right now, what you're allowed to do. And if it's a white circle with three black lines diagonally through it, that is, go as fast as you like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what all of us listening that have never been on the Autobahn are thinking is, the minute that sign shows up, everybody's going well over 100. But the thing that's fascinating when you're there is, that's not true.
Not at all,
There
actually.
Are people, like Paul and I, like Tom, like others of us that like to drive fast, we get in the left lane, we get going as fast as we can, and the only time we pull over is because there's a guy coming up behind you that somehow is even faster.
In a black Audi.
But
usually,
but there's an amazing number of people that stay one lane to the right, like a 3-4 lane highway in Germany. They'll be just one lane to the right. They're going quickly enough to pass like the slow trucks and that kind of stuff, but they're not gunning it.
Yeah.
This is my point. That what if the lanes were designated for allowable speeds and the far left lane was as fast as you and traffic will allow? I'm into, and I'm actually going to HOV lanes now.
Okay.
Instead
okay.
of being an HOV lane sticker that allows you in the HOV lane, that sticker, imagine the sticker's going from green to red.
Okay.
And if you
okay.
have a little red sticker on the back of your car, you are unlimited.
Okay.
Okay. And then you have that. That's what the HOV lane is for. So it actually has places where it's a separate lane. It's not even involved with the rest of traffic. It's a separate lane. That doesn't mean you're going to always get to go as fast as you want, because there will be a guy in front of you invariably. But the only way you get to that lane is because your car has that designation and you did all the licensing to get to there. Now, I realize this is already not a perfect system. Somebody that doesn't have the license could get in the car. I understand that. But by and large, if the car is being driven, it's probably being driven by the person that got that license.
Right, generally speaking.
Theoretically. I know this is not a perfect system.
You could game the system. Hey, can I buy your car?
Of course you could.
Because I know you've got the unlimited sticker on it.
But that would create a level of designation where if you want to be able to go faster and have more freedom in that regard, you're going to have to drive with the big boys and get trained accordingly.
I would hope that it would encourage drivers to at least have the skills and get better. Because to reference your point here, there's different classes of racing. Even within SCCA and NASA, there's different categories. If you are never been on track, I'm a rookie, not only does a sticker go on your car, but you're in category one, all right? And you're out there with folks kind of in your same level.
This is a great reference. You're right. What so if driving and three, in railroads are like that? It's a great point.
Yeah, what if they're railroads and the lanes, or maybe it's just, I guess it would have to be lane dependent. Mm-hmm. We're thinking this through with you all as we're coming up with the idea.
Yes, this is a live event. Welcome,
sort of conceiving the event here, conceiving the rules here. But then category two and three, you're up there with people who have been on track before. They're starting to get pretty good.
When you're doing track days, for sure, not all that often,
but you know they understand car control and tire management and weight management, all those things.
Yeah,
brake and turn in and all those kinds of things. And then category four is, all right, you guys are hot shoes. You know, unlimited. You can passing at will, wherever.
Yep,
all that kind of stuff. And people respect these categories because safety.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
That is why.
And that means in the normal roads thing, we'd have to have the things that in Germany they use them for speed cameras, and they use them for speed cameras here too, but they have the overpasses that are checking. Like they check on a toll tag, for example.
Right.
But that would be because there's no point. Let's not waste a good officer's time trying to police this problem. It would have to be checking whatever that sticker or the little RFD or whatever it is that your car has to have to be in that lane, very much like a toll tag, checking that when you go through regularly, there'd be a check. And if you aren't in the right lane, there is a hefty fine. And when I say hefty, it's got to be the kind of fine where you just look at it and you're like, that really unbelievably hurts. There's no way around it. It's not, I mean, that to be like those crazy fines that encourage you for how to do it. Is this easy? No. Is it likely? Probably not. But it's fun to
exactly.
theorize.
But is it perfect? No, it's not.
No, of course not.
Because of what we talked about with Chad, you know, talking about, you know, if he sees a hot car being handled well and it's going pretty far over the speed limit, he's not as concerned, even though, you know, and this is him personally speaking. I'm paraphrasing for him.
Yeah.
But he's not as concerned as, you know, some jalopy weaving through traffic and then, you know, he's got concerns.
Well, and
versus a really high horsepower car being driven expertly. Mm-hmm. That's what that number one lane's for. That's what we aspire to.
Yeah.
And then we all get our speed fixes, our daily triples and that kind of thing, knowing that we can control our car, knowing that
we're
within reason, all that stuff. But how do you define that?
If we did this, it would have to be, honestly, being in the upper class would have to be very expensive and take time. It would be like a pilot's license. It would be expensive and take time. Mm-hmm. And it would, please don't get me wrong, it would not be like so expensive that only rich people can do it. It would be something that's achievable, but I think it would have to have time involved as well, like a pilot's license, where you can't just throw down the money and you're a pilot. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You can't just go, here's all my cash, give me a plane. No, you're still going to have to learn. Okay?
Supercar owners get to do this. Here's all my cash.
Exactly right.
I'm an expert.
Exactly right. Give me the craziest, it can kill me now car. I don't have any business. I'm coming out of a car that there's no way that I can transfer my skills, but I have a big bucket of cash. It can't be that to get these licenses. You have to be able to put the time and the actual training in, and I think the upper levels would require track time.
Because that clapped out VW Polo with a full cage in it that weighs 1,600 pounds is going to smoke you.
That guy at the ring will forever be in my brain.
Paint job and everything.
When we got there for our pilgrimage film in 2015, there was a guy doing Tristan Farton, which is the open free-for-all, in, I don't even know what year it was, but it was a personally spray painted purple. You're right. Rattle can paint job Volkswagen Polo.
It might have even been a roller paint.
Stripped and fully caged, and he had a helmet on, and he was taking all comers.
Everybody.
It was just, you were going to get passed by that guy.
Obviously, the idea is far from perfect. We'd love to know your thoughts. But before we let you go, there is an update from Dan Mahoney. You remember we've been talking about Dan. Mm-hmm. He went to Italy on his honeymoon wanting to rent something fun. And what he did, he sent us an email recently with the update. He took a little bit of column A from Todd and a little bit of column B from Paul here. He said their trip started in Milan, then Tacoma, and ending in Venice. And so for column A, they ended up renting a Ferrari 488 Spider. Delish. And they cruised around in it. They went to, they had kilometer restrictions, of course.
As you do when you rent those things, yeah.
Man, where did they go? They went shopping. They cruised around. He said mainly it was about, you know, tunnels. They only went about 125 miles an hour, but he said the best spots for speed were from Treviglio back to Milan, empty, flat, straight roads, and then, you know, they'd look out for tunnels, downshift, and just nail the throttle. So that was fun. The pictures are gorgeous, Dan. And then, moving on, they went to Joey Reynolds in Como, Italy, rented a 1961 Alfa Romeo Giulietta Spider, manual, drum brakes, no power steering.
Wow, the other end of the spectrum, which is really fun.
Puttered around, and it was a pick up and drop off at their hotel.
Very cool. Very cool.
Dan said he mapped a driving route from Como to Bellagio to Lecco and back to Como to stay within the kilometer restrictions. But as they were pulling back into their hotel, back at the Como Hotel, there was a vintage Alfa meetup the very next day.
That's how you know you timed everything right
Brilliant.
There.
Brilliant. And they had a great time. So obviously it can work. Dan, you did your research.
Yeah, very
cool.
You
got two very Italian, but two very different experiences.
That's what I like, is the breadth of it, for sure.
So cool. So he did mention all you have to do to go to get your international driver's license is to go to AAA, and you get the stamp and you're good.
Interesting.
And he just went, and suddenly he's driving Ferrari in another country.
Wow. Love it.
Brilliant. Dan, thanks for the update. And like I said, let us know your thoughts. Topic Tuesday, if you've got a good one, and thoughts on the continued graduated license idea.
Because we're solving
it's
right
ongoing.
Now.
It's
solved right now.
Down
there
to
will
finances
be no questions,
too.
And everybody's going mean, to it, and it's going to breeze through all the yeah. politicians. It's just going to get signed off on
I've
right
figured
now,
out how to do public funding. I've
it's
figured it out.
You're
going to have to rewind to listen to it.
It's all solved.
Thank you, guys. We're coming back.
Summer's here, and with that comes sunshine and blistering hot car interiors. I know that leather seat seemed like a great idea at the time until you scalded your legs.
All you need is a custom sunscreen from Covercraft. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car, and they keep your car a lot cooler while you're off enjoying the sunshine or whatever you're doing. I have used these for years, and I'm telling you, I swear by them.
These custom sunscreens from Covercraft are available in a whole range of colors, and they're a simple, affordable way for you to keep your car cooler all summer long and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens from Covercraft. It's one of our favorite car accessories. And remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page.
We're often asked how we find the cars we recommend, because we do a lot of research for the show. Local or nationwide, our searches start with our friends at Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car site separately, you can enter your parameters into Auto Tempest one time and search them all at once.
You can see results from Cars.com, Cars Direct, eBay, and more, or you can jump to AutoTrader and CarGurus without entering anything new. You can even search all of Craigslist nationwide. You know how hard it is to search Craigslist all at once? You can with Auto Tempest.
Auto Tempest can help you find your next new or used car if there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the entire country. Plus, the folks at Auto Tempest actually do listen to this very podcast right along with you, and they're always looking for ways to refine the site to make it better. They already have research tools, buyer and seller guides, and are listening to what features users want.
So if we give you drive homework, or you're chasing your dream car, or you're just looking to feed the disease, autotempest.com is the place to start. Heck, I was on it an hour ago.
Now we're dealing with a zombie, or at least we're trying to get away from being a zombie. This exactly. is Orland's problem. Orland's writing to us from the South Seattle area, and he said, I've been commuting to and from work for the last 20 years, looking for a car to help me stay awake during my commute for the next 20 years. He has a Mazda 626. Remember those? Before it became just a Mazda 6. He has a Mazda 626 that has 200,000 miles on it, and he's thinking, maybe it's time for something else. Orlin, yes, by the way, you wrote the right place. It is time for something else. Your wife has a 2016 Honda Pilot that's paid for, and you use when you have to haul stuff or go on golfing trips or whatever. And you realize that that can now be, since that's paid for, then your truck that you also have on the side, which is a Mazda B3000, can just be what you describe. I love this description as your motorized wheelbarrow, which is perfect.
It's awful.
So you've been looking around for what's next, and you are smart enough. You've had a moment of revelation. You don't want to have another appliance, and so while you were first looking at like full on commute cars, you went, there has to be a better way. And this introduces, by the way, you have to tell him about his neighbor.
Oh yes, yes. So Orlin's neighbor actually. Put it all into perspective, he says. Orlin's neighbor, this is him talking. If you spend your life commuting to work in something you don't like, which also looks like what everyone else is driving, then are you really enjoying life?
Hey, that's fantastic. Does your neighbor listen to this show?
Because I wonder.
He sounds like somebody who would enjoy our madness for sure.
He says his neighbor also drives a Hellcat.
Yes,
and
I love that.
When Orlin asked him about his gas mileage, he laughed and said, well, when it gets low, I fill it up. And he's an ex-Marine.
He's an ex-Marine. Yeah, he's an ex-Marine, and he has a Hellcat.
Isn't
and he
that
just
a shirt?
That's all of us.
When it
good.
Gets low, I fill it back up.
Yes.
What's the problem?
My gas mileage is I fill the tank. Yeah, perfect.
All right, so Orlin once owned a murdered-out IROC Z in high school. He still remembers all the fun he had in that car, and he says there's a time in his life where he loved to drive. Then life happened, you know, work, commute.
Yes.
Stuff, vacations,
all the requirements
budgets.
That pull us away. Yes,
actually,
all that stuff.
Oh, we have to pay for all the stuff in our lives.
We do. That's too bad.
He wants some of that fun back, and he wants the fun back for $35,000.
Mm-hmm.
He can't push past $40,000 without doing more saving, which he doesn't want to do.
He's tired of the waiting.
I'm all about the here and now, too, Orlin.
He's tired of the waiting.
No more saving for the future. Let's spend it all now.
626 is out. We need a car to keep poor Orlin awake. And hopefully energized as well.
Yeah, for sure.
He doesn't have a huge commute, but this will be a commute car, first and foremost. This is not a, I'm looking for a track car. But maybe you'll go tracking. But this is a car that he would like to buy new, and he would like to drive it. See his 626. He would like to drive it for a long time.
Right, Exhibit A.
So expect a couple hundred thousand miles most likely going on this car. Now, when you take all that into consideration, you look at what he's got between $35,000 and $40,000. I was reading along here, and I went, you've got a problem. And then he actually discusses the problem because at that price point with those requirements, this is his description now, you can pick stylish and slow. See the Mazda MX-5 Miata and the 86. You can pick high performance but old. See the Nissan 370Z. Or you can pick his description, performance with lower quality, the Mustangs and Camaros. His big point here is where is the stuff that is going to be stylish, fun to drive, good performance, reliable, and still within his budget. Because, of course, you could buy used Porsche Caymans all day long for this.
Yes, yes.
But then you aren't getting a new car. There's no warranty. And how are you going to feel about the maintenance to keep that running to 200,000 miles? I believe it'll do it, but ouch.
His ex-Marine neighbor has suggested that if Orlin gets into a Hellcat that he wants his own...
Hellcats are the answer. That really is the story.
He says, but I don't want an old Hellcat. That is whatever new animated Cars movie that comes out, there's going to be a character. I'm an old Hellcat.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm an old Hellcat.
For sure. Yeah.
I'm cheap now, but I can still go really fast.
Yes, I'm telling you, $30,000 Hellcats, we're locking our doors.
Yikes. So he says the Challenger is cool too, but he says pretty ubiquitous around South Seattle. That's kind of interesting. And even though he loves speed, he doesn't think he's a V8 guy.
Okay.
In high school, yeah, cool, burnouts, all that stuff. But he says a lot of current four-cylinders will probably do just as well as his old IROC. Well,
true.
Yeah. I think the riding lawnmowers at Home Depot will do the same, but
well,
you know what I mean.
But based on the stuff he's driven and his car history, he's right. A lot of the stuff that you get into now that's running 300 horsepower or so from a little four-cylinder is going to feel crazy hot as a result.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so it's the smile test. What keeps the smile on his face and the confidence, having the confidence that you made the right choice based on, I bought the best car that fits me.
So
he's saying, yeah, Mustangs, Camaros, Challengers, he just doesn't think it's him. He doesn't think American Muscle really appeals right now, unless it's, of course, a Mustang GT350R.
Which is not in the budget.
And a tire sponsor.
Yeah, that as well.
All right, so he drove a 2019 Mazda MX-5 RF, was smiling a lot. He loved putting the top down.
That's very telling.
Convertible, it's actually in the equation here.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it was cool to be in something that got attention.
Mm-hmm.
He loved the handling. He could get by with the body roll, all of that stuff. Love the manual. Yep.
That car would go 200,000 miles.
Oh, easy.
Yeah,
easy.
It would.
And he says, you know, he drove an EcoBoost Mustang, and by the end of the drive, the door was making noise, and the salesman just turned up the radio to cover it up.
Perfect sales tactic. That's a man that knows his product right
hey, look,
there. That's
squirrel.
Unbelievable.
All right. So will he love the Miata? Will he love an RF?
Okay.
Or will he eventually be wanting more power? He says he's got a V-twin bike. He gets to triple digits really fast. But going from, you know, something like that to a Miata, will it leave him wanting? Will he look at other cars later on and be like,
if you keep listening to this show, probably. Honestly, this is the other problem, Orlin, that you haven't taken into consideration. Now that you've awoken the disease in yourself, you may not go 200,000 miles, not because the car won't, but because you're going to be like, honey, I'm buying a new car. And she's gonna be shocked. She's going to be like, well, it's only been like 75,000 miles. You said, this is the new me. Now I'm only running 75,000.
Right.
I mean, you and I, Paul, are like, hey, that's got 20,000 miles on it. You should get a new experience. But
exactly.
Orlin's a different guy. But
exactly.
We're going to totally compress this now.
All right. So I hear you, Orlin, about getting it and then wondering about an Edelbrock supercharger later on.
Sure.
He says it doesn't exist yet. Yes, it does not. But how about, you know, just a supercharger, something, you know, throwing money at it to improve the performance later on.
I also have to go back to the neighbor.
Oh, yes. You want to...
Because he mentioned to his neighbor... Now, keep in mind, to put the picture in your mind, let's just go with the stereotype. His neighbor is an ex-Marine, clearly is enjoying living his life, and has a Hellcat.
When it gets low, I fill it up. What's
your
problem?
So Orlin walked over and said... This was a mistake, by the way, Orlin. I'm thinking about getting a Mazda Miata RF. And his neighbor said, a Miata? Because, look, Orlin... Has your neighbor ever driven one? I'm truly asking this question because my money's on no.
Quite possibly no.
And that neighbor isn't going to appreciate a Miata, but I'm going to spin the equation. I bet you money if you had that RF in your driveway, he would grudgingly admit it looks great. He may not want to drive it, but he would grudgingly admit that car looks great.
Sure.
The full convertible version... There's a lot of people that you're never going to get past the looks of that car, and you're just going to assume it's a little car, and you don't know that it's any good. The RF looks quite exotic. It turns heads
it
in general.
It does. Agreed.
And I think that car parked in your driveway, plus, who cares what your neighbor thinks? And by the way, you've kind of told us you aren't your neighbor looking for a big V8 muscle car. That Miata, that RF, and I don't think it's the only thing that's an option for you, by the way, but that Miata RF, I love the fact that you drove it and it already spoke to you.
Mm-hmm.
Follow that rabbit trail. And I think, I'm curious, and you don't stay here, would you be able to tolerate a manual transmission on your commute? Because
this is
the
big question here.
I think that is a key element here to keep you engaged and enjoying. That Miata does a much better job, it would every single day, of being more engaging than that Hellcat.
I agree. I mean, Orlin, only you can answer that question. We can recommend up one side and down the other, but only you can actually answer, will you be able to tolerate the manual that does inform your choice? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And until the good folks at Flying Miata figure out how to stuff a Hellcat engine into a Miata RF, then I don't even want to think what that would do.
But the new one with the more power that we're working to get into
there
for
is
season
that.
Six, I mean, that's a little better as well.
Which is a genuine contender. Because
I agree.
Even a sprinkle of more power is great.
Yes.
We'll take it.
Yes.
Even just a sniff. Great.
And I've found from lots of people that, and I am this story, honestly. I started with big cars with V8s, and I've worked my way to the Lotus, okay? The more I discovered light-involving cars, the more I said, that speaks to me. Now, I know that's not everybody, but there is an engagement involved with a small car. This is why I say, look, the Hellcat at idle will leave you at a stoplight. Like, take your foot off the brake. Don't hit the gas. The Hellcat will probably
just
walk.
The power from the torque converter alone.
Just that. We're just gone, okay? So I get it. That's
exactly.
There's no on-ramp fun in the Miata RF unless it's a Cloverleaf. And then
well,
you're beating
true.
Everybody.
That's true.
That would be the thing. You and your neighbor find a squiggly back road. Like a squiggly back road.
Ooh.
See who has the better time.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So anyway, these are very different shopping experiences. And I want to encourage you for the stuff that speaks to you. I've got other ideas, too.
Because of the extra power in that RF, I say investigate that. Maybe that is the one you drove, but I'm all about that. the power equation and the, you know, having more power by virtue of a turbo more power turbo, I am concerned. I have thoughts, mm-hmm. and I want you to know that as much as I want you to have a rear-wheel drive fun car, mm-hmm. manual or not, mm-hmm. either
yeah.
way,
yeah, yeah.
I do want to recommend, first of all, the Veloster N.
I'm so glad. It's on my list, too. I think it's a phenomenal option here.
As you have probably heard, we just got out of that for Episode 1, Season 5, and came away really, really impressed. It's what Hyundai needs to be doing. It's what Mazda, frankly, should continue to be doing.
Out. That's a good call out. I agree with that, yeah.
But then there's another car over here for $35,000.
Wondering if you and I are going to have all the same list. Keep
less
going.
Civic Type R.
Yep, that's on my list
no
as well.
No kidding.
Yes.
We do not consult before the podcast, Orlin, to keep it fresh for that very reason. But the Civic Type R, if you have not driven that, because of comfort mode, that could actually override having a manual. That could mean, okay, all right, it's comfort, but I'm still driving a manual. So
yeah, it's going to be tolerance of that manual is going to be what it's going to be about. In both those cars, the Veloster N and the Civic Type R, and even the RF, but could you tolerate... The Civic Type R is manual only.
It is. It is, as is the SI.
Yeah.
Now, for rear-wheel drive, convertible or not, automatic or not, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the M240i is 35 or less all day long. 2017s and 2018s, slightly used.
Oh, so you're going something like it's only had few thousand miles on it.
It's car, exactly.
Yeah, okay, I see where you're going.
It's car.
All right, I see it.
But there's a lot of goodness. That's the balance between commute and you can really hustle it. Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant car to drive. And it does come as a convertible.
And they're genuinely quick.
They really are.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I've brought them up before, but the 240i is now the upgraded motor, power and a bit more stuff, and they're more expensive and all that stuff. You could go back, but I'm thinking 240i because you've got the choice. You've got automatic, you've got manual, you've got convertible or not, all those kinds of things. And does it look as fun? Is it
It's not nearly as standout.
What did you get? Who
not
are
nearly,
you?
Yeah.
What? You know, it's not one of those, but it does put the smile on your face again. I genuinely agree with you.
I think the Veloster, the Type R, and the RF, all three of those are, folks, I've turned over a new leaf, and I want a car I like.
Heck yeah.
Okay, you mentioned that you are a middle school band teacher and a football coach. I think coach drives any of those three cars, and that's really cool. The BMW holds its own, but it's far more normal.
It is, and just it's in there
but
because of rear-wheel drive.
To drive, everything he's looking for.
Brilliant.
I totally agree. It's everything he's looking for. He could even get the automatic. It's that 8-speed. It would be great.
Mm-hmm.
One last one that you mentioned in passing, Orlin, and I want to touch on it as well. You could get a Kia Stinger.
If
you headed down the route to your neighbors thinking the car for you is the Kia Stinger, you want a little bit bigger car, you still want some fun, you want some real grunt, but you don't need the big monster Hellcat he's got. It's the Kia Stinger.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a great choice. But I like these little hatchbacks and that RF for you quite a bit because I think – I really wonder about this manual thing. Write us back and let us know because if you can handle the manual on your commute, I think that goes a long way right there for keeping you engaged. Now you just need a car with a good manual and good speak-to-you dynamics and all the things we've listed do.
Orlin, really appreciate you writing to us. You've got your own debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. We're on the website. You can come visit us there and send in your debate. We definitely welcome them. We're jumping to social media questions now because we've got so many. Very quickly, a shout-out to Glenn DiGiacomo of Glenn's Car Collection on Instagram.
Yeah.
Friend of the show and fan of the show. Really appreciate you writing in, Glenn. And how are you? He's writing to us with a very quick debate, $38,000 budget for me.
This,
He's driven so many cars and has owned so many cars.
Tons. That's
that
what makes this hard.
You need something fresh, Glenn, and I want to offer this up. He's had 1Ms. He's had Z3M coupes, lots of BMWs, Caymans, lots of 911s, an Exige S. He's had almost all the high-end, greatest hits cars I have ever recommended.
He's owned, for sure, yeah.
But for $38,000...
Okay.
I have found your car.
Oh, have you really?
It's actually near you at TopGearPorsche.com.
Okay.
It's in New Jersey, and it is not a Porsche.
Somebody's so excited to have that URL, they can barely stand themselves.
No
by the
kidding.
Way. TopGearPorsche.com.
It's Top Gear Imports in the URL.
They're so excited about Porsche. Themselves that they actually got that URL. Sorry, go on.
It is, Glenn, a 93 Mazda RX-7.
That is a good new experience.
47,000 miles, because what Glenn is wanting is just a refreshing, It's like a giant mint for driving.
Just a different weekend car.
And it's also a weekend car. This owner has totally rebuilt the rotor engine. It just got new paint. It's only got 47,000 miles, $37,888.
I'm surprised it's that much, but that's probably super clean.
Others are actually more expensive because clean, unmolested FD RX-7s are going up in price again.
Yeah, they are.
Here's one for $38,000, and because it's just the weekend car, it's rear-wheel drive, high-revving, manual.
It's a very different feel.
It's a three-quarter size sports car. I think it's the refreshment. It's not German, and I'm really excited to look at this car.
That's a good random one there.
He's had Acura NSXs.
He's had all kinds of stuff. He's
so
had
much.
S2000s, a couple of S2000s, and he had that Lotus Exceed. One of the things he mentions here is he'd like to get into something that will hold its value. Now, Glenn, that's where the whole record scratches for me. This is the problem with this disease that we all have.
I hear you.
You can't really shop that way. I mean, that's really the problem because
it's tough at low budgets.
Well, but it's kind of tough, period, because you're guessing, what can I buy, drive, enjoy, sell, and not lose money?
Mm-hmm.
About the only thing I can think of that really holds up that is any kind of normal person budget is the Lotus Elise, and you've already had an Exige.
Yeah.
And the only reason the Elise hangs on to it is because nobody's building anything like that again.
Yeah.
Okay.
True,
that's
true.
The reason. All right. So that's a really difficult ask, honestly. So I think in many ways that goes out the window. I found a car I loved for you because you've actually said that you are looking actually for the current Corvette Stingray, a used one, of course, a 29 Cayman S, which is just after the IMS bearing because you had a prior one and you loved it, but this is post-IMS bearing and that one was pre. So there's that one. Or maybe another 997 or an E92 M3, which is close to stuff you've already owned. I see that world. What I want for you isn't in your budget. And that's that generation Boxster Spider.
Oh, good.
Because that's not anything you've owned, and the Spider is the refined, better version of that generation Boxster. But the problem is they're 50, 55.
I was going to say, they're still 55, 60, are they not?
It depends on which one you find.
Real
but,
nice
but
ones,
they're certainly they're 50, and he's talking 35, 38, so we're out of budget. That was the car I was laying on. I was like, that's perfect, but it's just too much. The other reason I like that car is because that car, within reason, is going to hold its value.
True. True.
So I don't know, Glenn. I know that you own lots of stuff at a time. So I don't know if this part of your budget has flexibility, which is why I want to mention it anyway. Mm-hmm. Because you're the kind
Fair
of guy,
enough.
Because you've got lots of cars in the fleet, you may just want to go out in general. But I'm sitting here looking at your list going, that's a car that is close to the stuff you like, but it isn't something you've had. And it's the greatest hits version of that car.
It's true. Back to 2011, the year for greatest hits.
But I will say, you touched on something with the RX-7 that's very interesting. The 90s cars are all turning now.
I wonder if they start to
They're
go back up,
They're all starting to turn now. Look at what's happened to your beloved 928s.
I know.
Look at what's happened to the 300ZXs
to
that I
Z.
love.
Yeah.
Those 90s cars are all starting to turn now because, let's be honest, it's the same thing that happens. It's that 20 to 40 year swath, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of us that were in high school when those cars were new and couldn't possibly afford it are now old enough to have money and be like, you know what I've always wanted?
Exactly.
And so they're all turning.
Exactly.
Crazy.
Oh, man. CamTX_NY asks our thoughts on purchasing a car that we know has been used as a Turo car. What are our precautions that we would take other than a general pre-purchase inspection? And this is specifically for an S2000. Mm. Todd and I have talked about press cars being over-maintained. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really being used hard, okay? But they're really well-maintained. In that case, fine. But for a Turo, It's a question mark.
Yeah,
I agree, and especially for an S2000, because this is not just Prius, Corolla, Camry, Accord. It's just been driven, and people are saving money on their rentals. It's hooned.
Well, and that's the other thing about it, is as we've made the joke before, others have made the joke, no car gets beat on like a rental car. And I'm sorry.
It's the fastest car you've ever driven.
I'm sorry, but most people treat a Turo like a rental.
Oh, absolutely.
Not like they borrow their friend's car. If you borrow your friend's car, you might hoon your friend's car, but you're aware of the fact that you're going to look them in the eye later if something breaks. Okay?
Exactly.
When you have a Turo car, especially if you did the Turo with the insurance, we left the Turo lot in Los Angeles once, you and I, in something we actually rented because we couldn't get the press car we needed. We rented a car at the Turo lot.
Right.
We turned the corner, and passing us, wiggling because they could barely control the car, was a Corvette C7 Z06 that somebody else had just Turoed. And we looked at each other. We said, that car's wrecked before the rental's done. Because absolutely. They were, I mean, literally, this was less than a block away from where we all picked up these cars.
It had hit a curb and or something, right?
No, we didn't see them hit anything yet. But that was my concern, is that they were already borderline out of control. Block, you remember this car now,
they've teed themselves up for danger.
Block away from where they picked the car up. It was like, that car's going down. So this is rental car thinking applied to somebody's personal car. Now you're thinking of buying it. Let me switch the question to you. Would you buy a used rental car?
I mean, my parents did back a long time ago, but it was a Camry. Yeah. It would just run anyway, and it doesn't matter. But for a specialty car like this, I know it might be cheap, but you might still find as good of a deal and a car that you know has not been quite so beat on.
Yeah, I think that one's probably just
I have a red flag about that one.
I hear you.
It depends. It could be amazing, but I just... It's hard.
That's hard for sure. Ariopolis asked an interesting question, and I'm curious where you fall on this. He said, what's the most rewarding feedback we've gotten from people where we've recommended certain cars or car stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what I like, and I'm not going to talk to a specific instance. I'm going to talk to something that happens now and then that I love seeing. When somebody writes to us, and there's always a larger story, so I'm not going to try to get into a specific one, but they write to us and they say, I kind of thought cars were cool. I kind of liked them. Mm-hmm. I've always driven a car and it's been fine, but I've always thought, you know, cars are pretty and they were kind of that thing over there that you kind of respect and kind of like, but you're not really into.
Yeah.
And they listened to this podcast and they went out and realized, I love cars and I have bought something I love. I don't even care what the car is in that scenario. Just the fact that they had kind of a glancing interest in cars, and because of interacting with our show, and in some cases, others of you listening, if you go to our Discord or whatever, they interact with kind of this community that is Everyday Driver, and they realize, I love cars, I chased cars, using what I've learned, I have now found something I love. I like that story more than I can tell you, and it's happened a lot, and I'm thrilled by that.
Yeah, especially when they name a particular thing, and your debate hasn't necessarily been featured, but you can infer information about what Todd and I are talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
You think, okay, the guys have said this. Wonder if I take that thinking and I go drive, you know, give yourself driving homework. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you come away finding a car that it's just you.
And
I love that.
And prior to that, this person, whoever's writing, they weren't known to be a car person. Mm-hmm. It's not like they had a string of cars and looking for the next one. They were just like, I like cars. I like that car. I love that car. That's awesome.
And especially for a good price, a good budget.
Yeah,
when cars
sure,
are well bought,
sure. Yeah.
You did your homework and you dug up something, you found this cool, awesome thing for a great price. Even though there are many emails when people write to us and say, yeah, you know that polymer? I kind of blew that out too.
And that is a common threat.
Did Paul go high? No, because I went past that.
Yeah, exactly. Paul didn't blow the budget. I, the person with the budget, blew the budget.
That's always a good laugh. Nick Dorn 2.0 on Instagram asking about mismatches. Which cars have engines that outsign the rest of the platform? Hellcats. And vice versa. Toyota 86s. Which bonus question is, which engine and chassis would we combine to make your ultimate weekend car? Weekend car. Well, there's so many good ones that are already there. I mean, I'm Cayman guy. Anything mid-engine, I would say. There's so many cars that already kind of check that box, if you know what I mean. But from engines outperforming chassis, it's interesting these days because of the amount of cars that are turboed and have small displacement. But what that meant is less weight over the front wheels.
Sure, definitely.
And interestingly, I think even in SUVs, you and I are starting to gravitate more towards those. Even though we love big V8s and the power they give, we're always open to, you know, say the Mercedes GTS, the AMG GTS, had an inline six that was turboed within an inch of its life. I think we might be more attracted to something like that kind of recipe.
Interesting.
Over the big V8, something like that. I see that coming more and more with the proliferation of power, and especially what AMG's getting out of four cylinders these days, which is astounding. But I feel like mid-engine is just that recipe, even though we're kind of dailing both during the summer, dailing both our cars.
Yeah, what about, I'm totally thinking of this right now, what about the engine in your car in an FRS?
Oh,
that, because that has that, the higher you rev it, the better the power. Really good naturally aspirated motor. You're dealing with a little over 300 horsepower, which is essentially, I think, the upper limits of good balance for that chassis. I think 250 to 300 is probably the sweet spot for that chassis. So it'd be a little heavier, probably closer to 3,000 pounds. But that's got a great engine sound. I can't imagine the packaging reality of this. I'm not even thinking that. I'm just theorizing here. That engine and drivetrain, engine and exhaust, if you will, from your car in an 86 chassis would be really interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because, you know, there's the guy that put he's got the 4586. He's got the 458 motor in an 86, and it's a big V12, and it's a screaming drift car. I get it. It's funny. But I also just wonder, because of the personality of the engine in your car, married with the proper amount of power for that chassis. I'm totally dreaming here, but there you go.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. All right, what are the questions you find here?
There are many, as always. Hey, about Ronnie Merrill on Instagram says, how do we help him justify the fact that there are five people in his family, he and his wife and three kids, and he wants to get a car, he says, with only four seats. You know what, Ronnie, I'm going to push you right over the edge. Two seats. What's up with this four-seat stuff? Because here's the thing, and this is a common reality, and look, it's a common reality across the board. It's not just you guys. Once family happens, there is this thing that happens to all of us where we just think every car. And honestly, I'm going to go to the side note. This is also happening in car culture at large. This is the reason, what I'm about to say is the reason that CUVs are proliferating. Because we somehow have been drugged and convinced that every car we have has to do everything we might ever need it to do.
Yeah.
Why? Why? Does every car we have to carry every possible family member on a camping trip? Why?
That's marketing right there.
It is. It is. And this is the reason that CUVs are succeeding so well. There is nothing wrong with a tool for the job. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So if you would like a car that is a little more fun, and now I'll stay in 2+2s. Okay. Now you can only pick up two of the kids. This is what scheduling is about, folks. This is, I need to go here and then I need to go there. You don't have to have all cars that do all things all the time, because this is now the one-size-fits-all shirt. Technically, you're covered and none of it's good. Okay? All right? It doesn't actually fit anybody. So, if you have the appliance family car, great. Don't feel like every other car has to do everything the appliance do-it-all family car does. So if you don't have the whole family can go in the car, I think that's okay, because there's times for cars. And you actually follow up by asking me specifically, do I ever have time when I wish that my whole family, me and my wife and my son, could all be in the Elise? Now, we all used to get in the FRS, and that was very cool. But the truth is, for me, it's not that big an issue. Because we all, as a family, really like the Elise. And we know its limitations, which is, it's tiny.
Yeah.
So we just balance out. My wife will go on errands, and she's going to pick up my son somewhere in the process. She's like, can I take your car? She just knows the errands she's running
and
are going to work.
The two of them have that experience.
The two of them love it.
And they're bonding, and they're doing their thing.
And then he and I drive in it, and she and I drive in it.
Right.
There's a rotation happens, and it makes it even more of a kind of special event than just everybody pile in this thing. What would happen, Ronnie? I'm going to ask you, and your wife, hi, is now listening as well, and probably the kids. But here's the question. What if you had a car that you couldn't all fit in, and that was now a little bit of an event car?
I like it.
I know all of these dads, and they have like actual planned play dates with specific kids.
Yeah.
Okay? That's very common. Okay, so what if you had that car where it's a car where when you go out with your wife or you go out with one of your children, you take that car. It's an event car as well. Hopefully it's usable enough you can do other things, but why not make it an event?
I like that. There's father-daughter days. There's date night with your
wife.
I'm just taking my son for ice cream and it's just he and I.
Totally.
Like that kind of thinking, and the car is part of that.
And a lot of times scheduling is very possible to figure this out. The thing that shouldn't happen, and I've learned this with my wife, because we've kind of did it naturally, but don't do this. Don't make that only your car.
Yeah.
So then you have the situation where, honey, I'm going to take the big family barge today and I'm doing all the pickups and that kind of stuff. You take the fun one.
Right. Right. That's excellent. Question on Instagram from Fastline Motorsports, who was watching the Goodwood Festival of Speed and asking, why are all the old cars of the 1920s and 30s, why do they have so much positive camber on the front wheels? I'm going to take a stab at this, but follow me for a minute. The very first freeway in the United States was Highway 110 from Pasadena down to I think, right into downtown, and then it got extended. Okay,
it's very fun. It's not like any other freeway. It is very fun.
It's fun for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's very twisty through the hills of LA.
Yes,
because in the 50s, cars could not hang on. Tire technology and cars in general didn't really hang on as well as a modern Camry could today.
This is true. This is very true, yeah.
It was built for the times. Mm-hmm. It was built for slow cruising and slow just freeway speeds. And
yeah,
it was a little bit faster, but it was the road, okay?
Mm, interesting, okay. All
right. So now we come to cars of the 20s and 30s when road construction still is not proliferated throughout the U.S. The interstate system hadn't even been conceived yet, okay? And so I believe it has to do with the crown of the road being able to drain off more so because drainage was a little bit different. It wasn't as well executed, let's say then, on roads then as modern roads are today. And so when you're going around a corner, think of the attitude of the car, and now the inside wheel is now right side up. It's actually perpendicular to the road, therefore more tire surface on the road. Mm-hmm. Giving you better grip.
Keeping the proper tire surface on the
correct.
Road.
Yeah. I believe that was the
as
thinking
you lean in.
Due to the time. Just think about when those cars were around. We don't have modern asphalt and concrete and as fast roads as we do now. So think about back then and then what the cars had to deal with. And then, okay, how could manufacturers kind of compensate for what road construction was then? Mm. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the headspace of why those cars had that. It was really an effort to counteract. It was a counteraction of, you know,
I'm sure
the road construction
offset.
And then that inside going around a corner, now your wheel is actually right side up. It's perfectly zero camber.
I'm sure it has to do with offsetting suspension movement and trying to keep, because those tires were quite limited.
They were limited.
Quite thin. So trying to keep the proper amount of the tread on the road surface.
And suspension. It didn't have independent suspension then because that came in, gosh, what, 60s? Somebody correct me again.
I'm not going to guess. But I'm going to get that wrong.
The independent suspension actually keeps the actual
the wheel
camber.
Vertical. The wheel vertical, yes.
Whereas it was springs then in the 20s and 30s. Springs and solid axles, and how do we compensate? Something had to go. Mm. So that's where they actually try to devise that better handling there.
Those tires were not good.
They were astounding.
They're really not. They worked, but anyway, there's that company. I forget. There's a company that actually just makes old vintage tires in new tire
rubber. Oh, is it Coker?
I think so. I think they're one of them. That's all they do, which is a whole thing. Clearly, they need people to keep buying cars at auctions because they need to keep making tires for somebody.
They will.
There's that, yeah.
All right, last question here from Lucky Jerk asking, when somebody owns two cars, he feels like it's tough to drive the fun car to work because of the fear of people judging you and making you, you know, people thinking you make so much more money when you really don't. Mm. And that has to do with the everyday driver ethos when you've bought a car so well. It happened with my 928. I paid $19,500 then.
Yeah, you did.
Grinding my teeth now. I should have kept it. But
separate
$19,500 then. And it was an $80,000 car new in 1988.
Yeah, yeah.
And people are going, wow, what? Because it still looked and performed like an $80,000 sports car.
First time I put my dad up in our Porsche Cayenne, he looked at me like I had spent money so badly.
Yeah.
And then I told him I got it for $25,000 and he then nearly passed out. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the well-bought,
you
know, the well-researched cars that we promote.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you can brace yourself. You can try it out. If it's as bad as you fear the first time, then you're going to have to make the decision whether you ever do it again, whether you ever drive the fun car to work again.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe you can park it in the back, hide it under a shady tree or something around.
Yeah, hopefully it's not bright yellow like my Lotus and wants to be
hard.
Parked right up front so you can see it.
It's
please
hard,
don't do that.
But otherwise, if people ask, that's your entry point to engage them in the thinking that you and I talk about all the time is...
Yeah.
Better bought. I bought used. Have you noticed these cars have plummeted in price and now that car is actually cheaper than your new Accord?
Yeah. Well, there's absolutely those conversations. You can ask people what they're driving. I mean, this is a very common thing. I hate to call it out, but it's true. Texas. That pickup next to you was probably more expensive than most sports cars on the road. But the impression is you pull up in the pickup, You just bought a pickup.
You're one of the boys.
But you pull up in a sports car. You're rich and spending money weird.
Yeah,
but that's very common. It's very common. It's not just Texas, but I know it's happened there. It's happened to me there. So there's that. But so the other part of this equation is, do you need to care? And I know this is tricky conversation, but there is the whole part of it about does it need to matter to you? Because, and I know we're getting way down into like the psychological weeds here, but everybody's spending their money on something.
Psychological weeds.
There you go. Everybody's spending their money on something. And went out and said, I like cars. I like driving this car. And I almost think, maybe I'm wrong here, I almost think if you drive that car more often than every now and then, it looks more normal. If you pull it out every now and then and, you have a whole car you only drive occasionally, you have lots of money. What if you drive it all the time?
Yeah, true.
What if you drive it every day that it's a nice day and there's hundreds of those in the calendar year?
Sure.
If you drive it a third of the time you drive it to work, it becomes less of a big deal.
It's very true.
Just thinking.
Very true. Guys, thanks for all your questions. Keep asking on social media and we're enjoying and hopefully you are as well. So thank you so much for your questions. We're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.